right, Dieter and Hutch. I'm in Seattle. Jake's in San Francisco. One of us was at the football game.
Yeah, that's right.
What did you call it, Jake? What was your Hutch?
Brockalypse.
The Brockalypse. That's a good term.
Just spent like 5 minutes on Canva creating a spin cycle Brock party, so I enjoyed that.
It was the Brockalypse. That was a game that we'll never talk about again if things go well, and will be constantly referred to if things don't go well from this point on. It just felt like it existed only to be referenced or not referenced.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things to take away. I think it's incredible how bad the Carolina Panthers are, and the fact that the 49ers gave them every opportunity and they were just fundamentally unable to do anything that was even remotely threatening, aside from Ted McMillan like pulling off a sick double move against Renardo Green, which he beat him, but my God, that was a hell of a move.
He had two drops before that, it should be noted.
He did. But also, Dave Canales not doing a good job. I was like, oh, I gave him way too much deference. I think Evero's doing a decent job. The DC, I think they should probably switch roles. Have Evero be the head coach. Because what the fuck was that 2-point conversion attempt?
Well, where, mathematically speaking, it does make sense. That's the down 8 test, right? Where you're supposed to go for 2, so you only need to get it once.
Right, but he only did it after they made the extra point and got an extra yard, which, if you're going to sneak it or run it, makes a difference. If you're going to set up in shotgun and not even put the quarterback out in space, you're just going to have a traditional like shotgun pass.
Right.
Which condenses the space further, makes it harder for you to actually score in that situation. It makes no sense whatsoever.
We were talking about this in the preview, and people are like, they're 6-5. Like, they're good. I don't know why you guys. So he just threw for 455 yards. And it's like, no, they suck. I'm sorry. Like, we were looking for anything interesting. Do you know how hard it is to be so bad that we can't find anything interesting that you do on either side of the ball? I mean, to be frank, the most interesting thing that was noted on the show was you being like, they run a lot of mirrored concepts. That's not a compliment. That means that your offense is high school level. And it kind of looked that way for the entire game. And as bullish as I want to be, like legitimately, I want to give a lot of credit to the 49ers defense, because I thought they were really good. In the environment they were put in, they were a dominant force compared to the Carolina Panthers offense. But that is such a low bar. And as much as I want to go in and be like Jair Brown, I mean, two interceptions, can't take those away. Those were great. He was great.
And his tackling was like really
great in run fit. I thought
not Jason Pinnock. Well, we can get to that later.
No, I thought Malik Mustafa looked like his old self again. Yep. I thought there were a lot of good things. And you know me, I'm going to say it. Safeties are destiny, but it's really easy to be a good safety when you never fear someone throwing it over the top of your head. It's really easy to do that. And that's the issue that I have with this 49ers safety crew. If it's in front of them, yeah, sign me up. That's an elite unit. If it's over their head, that's a real problem. But, and this is good news. Not going to be an issue next week either. Not going to be an issue against the Browns and Dink and Dunk Shadur. He's got his own logo, but he can't push it 20 yards down the field. But apparently neither can Brock Purdy.
Shadur did throw an off platform 50 yarder. In that last game. So
please let me have it. Let's go into the Purdy interceptions. This is the stuff that people are freaking out about. Jake, I'll be honest. I might be macro concerned, but I'm not micro concerned. And to explain that a little further, three bad throws, but three good decisions. I know a lot of people looked at it and go, oh, well, you can dump it down here and you can dump it down there. No, those were chunk plays that were drawn up perfectly. They had the exact look they wanted. Separation. The ball needs to be on time, in rhythm, and with enough juice. And three times, and the third one was a hell of a play. Don't get me wrong. Wide open.
So was the first.
Right. Like, hell of a play by Jason. He's a great player. But, like, they were bad throws. And my concern is I'm not concerned if it was a one-week blip where Brock Purdy just didn't have it, right? He's a starting pitcher. Sometimes you don't have it.
Yep.
And you don't say that, you know, Clayton Kershaw or Logan Webb are bad starting pitchers because they don't have it for a day. And if that's the case, they're fine, because those plays were there to be made and he didn't make them. But if Brock Purdy cannot push the ball 20 yards down the field like he did against Arizona,
right,
then man, that's a real problem, because what separates him and Mac?
Yeah, exactly. And then and if that margin shrinks, then you go, okay, well, I'd rather the guy who like knows his game is dink and dunk and isn't going to get into situations where he can't push it because he knows he can't. Yeah, I think I noticed some hesitancy in that first game for sure.
You were right on that. You were right.
He was, everything was a half tick late, and he is a guy where you can't afford for it to be late. And so I think it's funny because I think people that are like traits only people miss a lot of the point of processing. I think the thing is, if you have traits, it saves you a lot on the mental side, where you can make errors because you have an arm that can make up for it. Brock has not been a guy that has ever been able to make up for mental mistakes because, or I mean, physical mistakes, because right. Like, mentally he has to be there. He has to be sharp. And so if he's processing anything a half tick late, his body can't make up for it. No. He has to be perfect. He has to anticipate with elite anticipation. By the way, Bryce Young, whew, none of that. That's, he's a full total package in the wrong way.
I don't understand how he's been successful. I don't understand how I came out of the game
and I was like, they immediately need to move on from him. Immediately. Yeah. They need to draft a quarterback with immediately. But yeah, I think with Brock, it's like, so if he's not feeling it, if he's not seeing it clearly and just able to rip it in time, like in stride, that's a real problem. And while his arm, like the ball, like is fluttery, I can sort of accept him not looking fully up to speed physically and the ball not coming out as hot. If he's seeing it clearly and if he's fully trusting, I'm not sure he's fully trusting what he's seeing, and that worries me more.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's not something that they have a lot of runway to figure out, because he's, and maybe this is a thing where almost shock therapy would help him, because for the first two games, he's had nothing but time. He will not have time on Sunday against Cleveland. I mean, Miles Garrett is rushing against him. I know we've said really kind things about
that game is going to be bad. That game's going to be bad.
I mean, it might not be.
It looks like it's going to rain or snow and be freezing and brutal.
15 to 20 mile per hour winds off the lake. Yeah, no, it's small hands, smells like cabbage. Not a great combination for what's going on here. But the two ways you can look at it. One, okay, well, now you don't have that window. So Brock, if I was correct, and I don't think I was, and it's Brock just feeling a little too comfortable and maybe thinking, oh, I don't have this pressure on me to think about it all that much, and just taking that extra beat, which he can't afford to do because his arm can't make up for the loss of rhythm there and the loss of, you know, it's not accurate enough right now. And footwork is everything for a quarterback. And I don't know if his footwork's where it needs to be based on having turf toe and not being able to get the ground force and drive the ball.
I think on that first one, his feet were off.
Right. So there's that. That can be fixed because he's had elite stuff before. Now, maybe the turf toe prevents that from happening, but you have to roll the dice there. The second aspect is if he's being a little bit too patient in the pocket, and then that's leading to the out of rhythm nature of his throws. Okay, well, he'll not have any time in the pocket.
Right. But he did scramble a couple times really well in this game, including on that second interception, which to talk about that one.
Yeah.
It's like the throw was there, right? Pearsall had leverage. That's a touchdown. And so, like, I understand it. That said, I think there was a lack of appreciation for what you needed to do against the Panthers. If this is a team like the Rams or like an elite, and in the moment, it's hard to have that context. I'm not going to like tell a quarterback to like have an appreciation for it. But I don't think there is a full enough appreciation for this is a team that you don't need to like hit every big play. You need to take, like they did on the first drive, methodical, slow, like just eat up, just do whatever you have to do to get down the field slowly. And if you're not making mistakes, like they're not going to beat you. And you did make mistakes and you still beat them. But well, like
we saw
that
in the second half, right? Like they kept it super simple and they still moved the ball like crazy. I don't know why it took them so long to figure out, hey, let's run it outside the tackles, which you were telling them to do on Wednesday. And they finally did it. And guess what? It worked great. And it worked with Robinson and it worked with McCaffrey. It worked great. I think that there was something to be said for maybe the Niners wanting to put up some style points in that game and go out there and on a national stage, just absolutely throttle a team, knowing that in the back, on the back burner, they could always just do the simple stuff and still win.
Right.
But that's a bold strategy, Cotton.
And I think my issue with that second one is, like, he's throwing off platform at a weird angle, and he's already, like, running. And to try and, like, pull it back from scrambling for, like, what's a clear first down to trying to make that throw. If he's set, if he's, like, moving forward and sets his feet and throws it instead of taking the scramble, I'm okay with that. But, like, half scrambling, throwing off platform.
It was a 30-yard jump pass.
Is just bad. It's just bad. Like, just take the yards in front of you. And I get it because it's there, but, like, that was greedy.
I agree with that. But again, it felt like there is something to be said for the only thing that separates, save for the scrambling ability, which is not elite with Brock to begin with, but is much better than
it's Max. It's almost elite in that his like ability in a moment to like slip a tackle and couple yards is elite, but I know what you mean. Yeah. It's not, he's not in that echelon.
You're not building the offense around it. It's a nice perk that he can steal first downs, and it's a huge aspect of winning football games, but it's not something you want to hang your hat on as this is the differentiation between me and Mac Jones. The differentiation is that Mac Jones is the worst deep ball passer in the NFL, so they don't throw deep ever.
Right.
And Brock Purdy was one of the best deep ball passers in the NFL, but that was not the case against the Carolina Panthers. And if that's a trend that continues forward, the Niners are in trouble because they might be able to get to 10 wins anyway with just the dink and dunk aspect and the Mac Jones offense. But once they get to the playoffs, they're going to need to make chunk plays. They're going to need to convert on those shots that were there and weren't converted on and turned into not just incompletes, but interceptions. That's when you're dead. That's when it's over for you in the first quarter, as opposed to ending it for the other team in the first quarter. The Panthers are a JV operation. I mean, I can see why the podcasters quit watching that team. And the Niners literally messed around and still won comfortably. There was never a moment in that game. I really felt like there's never a moment in that game, even up 7-0 with the Panthers in the red zone, where I'm like, Niners are losing this one.
They don't have anything. They have McMillan.
I like Coker, but he didn't do anything.
Right. I mean, I just can't take them seriously. And like that one guy that was in the comments that was like arguing with our commenters, like, oh, you really, the Panthers like don't, they just don't have anything. There's nothing. We both came to the same conclusion. They're dull. They're not a team that keeps you up at night. And they've got McMillan and they've got Derek Brown, who's like a 2A sort of star. And then there's J.C. Horn, who's phenomenal, and then like left the game. And then it was fine after that.
Yeah. The fact that that team has 6 wins speaks to the parity of the NFL.
100%. And I think what you're talking about in terms of like the offense, like if they're going to do anything in the playoffs, they have to be slinging it. Like the offense has to be the driving force, because other offenses in the playoffs are going to be too good to be like, oh, the defense is going to be able to hold them. No, Bryce Young's not a serious quarterback. Like, that's not a serious game. There's no threat there. But when you get to the playoffs, like, you're going to bet that those teams are going to put up points. And the only way for the 49ers to compete is by being dialed in offensively. And I think that's where you go, is Brock going to get this back? Is this a one game? It's not been 2 full games, but it's been ugly. And I will say, someone pointed out, like, Jennings. Like, Jennings is slow. And there are certain components of, like, plays where you're like, that, I know it's going to him, but they need moving forward. They need to find a better option than him on some of these plays.
I haven't gone through all of the tape yet. I've tried to be a little bit more judicious in my cut-ups since I did morning radio and KBR today from 6 to 10. So we're jumping into this right afterwards. And so I was doing it during commercial breaks and, 45 minutes before the show. We had Jair Brown on the show. So we talked to him. And,
nice.
Hell of a game for him. I do want to get into the safety stuff in a little bit, but it did feel to me, and I think Troy Aikman mentioned this probably as they cut to a clear zone look, but it did feel to me like Carolina was trying to do more man stuff in this
apparently game. Not according to Ricky. I asked him about it.
Okay.
He's like, no, okay. It did feel like that early. Like maybe,
what freelancing looks like then.
No, but I think some of it is they're zone heavy, but there's like man match stuff where you're like, that looked like man, but it's really like a zone coverage. Mm-hmm. But I asked, I had the same thought and Ricky was like, no. They play zone. So I didn't get any man.
Here's where I stand on this. Again, it's a game that you just hope that you never have to reference back to. This team is so close. Like that's maybe the most frustrating part. If Brock doesn't throw three interceptions, let's say he only throws one. Let's just say the last horn one is the only one, or the first horn one's the only one. This team wins 32-7, yeah. Right? Or whatever. And we're all in a very different space. And again, you can't take away the interceptions. Those count. There's no good interceptions. But it's like, well, what was the difference? Was it just he doesn't have the arm strength? No, it was minor stuff. It was small stuff. And it's stuff that can clearly be corrected. I don't know if it will be, but it can be.
Right.
And then the defense, because they're going up against an offense that doesn't challenge them, they're able to sell out against the run and actually stuff the run and look really good against the run in that game. And because they don't fear anyone going over the top, save for the one play, which was one-on-one on the outside with, I guess Brown just decided I'm done covering this area over there, which is a whole other thing. But in that, it's like, okay, this would have been a great hold it up game, right? Because island right. games count double and triple. And instead, maybe we're having the exact opposite thing. Mike Elko, the head coach of Texas A&M, had a good quote the other day, which is, my job as the coach is to be the opposite of whatever my team is. When everything's buzzing and we're rocking and rolling, I need to be the pessimist. And when everything is going wrong, I need to be the optimist. And I'm paraphrasing him. I'm feeling like that a little bit with the Niners right now, which is a lot of people are really kind of concerned about what that game meant. And I'm thinking that they are two or three plays away
right.
from really breaking that thing wide open. And the fact that they didn't ever feel fear speaks more to maybe where this team is than anything else. The defense is something we'll have to get into. But again, I don't think that that's going to be an issue this upcoming week either. They can sell out against the run again because dare Shedeur Sanders to beat you over the top. I think you're going to come out A-OK on that front.
Yeah, I think the way they get beat next week, and we'll preview it if we have time. I think we will.
Right. Thanksgiving.
Is like a lot of like dink and dunk tight end stuff and Quinshon Judkins running them into a pulp. But yeah, I do think there's like an element of JC Horn being a fucking phenomenal corner
awesome.
And making two sick plays.
Yeah.
And again, the bigger concern for me is just Brock processing and trusting what he sees. I do think it was like interesting. Like I was in the locker room after and Fred Warner's like sort of joking openly about the interceptions, like in a, he was sitting next to Purdy's locker and like,
right.
Clearly they felt like a need to sort of pump him up after that one. Mm-hmm. And I think that's just good veteran leadership, but they haven't had to do that in a while.
Yeah, and I do think that there's the read that I get off of the Niners is that they have unwavering faith in Brock. And that's like the players. Like you heard them talking about him after the Arizona game, and you would have thought that Patrick Mahomes had been reincarnated. Right. And again, I don't think that they're off base with that because they see it in practice in the times that we don't see. And they understand that the offense can hit all three areas with Brock as the quarterback. But right now it's more theoretical than anything else. And it's been theoretical now for a while. Like, when was the last great Brock game? If we're going to exclude Arizona, which I think is fair, because that was a joke of a Cardinals team, which, again, right. to the Niners' credit, you want to make the bad teams look bad. Like, oh, they haven't played anybody. Well, did you kick the ass of the teams that you were supposed to beat? Okay, good. Maybe they didn't yesterday, but in a way they did, because it was never something they feared. I can't remember the last great, like, just ripping Brock game, because did it happen at all last year? Are we talking NFC Championship game 2023? Like, when was the last one?
It's hard for me to remember. Like, off the top of my head, I can't really think of one. Like, it's been a minute.
We're going to need one here. And
yeah, they're in a I was busy looking up Drew Brees' high interception games to see how many he had, because
yeah,
well, it's just something of like, I think people, and it's not to defend like Brock's interceptions, because some of them were particularly bad, and some of the throws outside of that and the way he played were more worrisome. But like, quarterbacks do have bad games.
Oh yeah.
And like, that perspective, I think, is important.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, it would be a lot easier if you could point to something other than the Arizona Cardinals game as like, here's testament. But when you have that Jaguars game, when you had a very up and down game against the Seahawks, which has aged well, mainly because of time, but also because we know that Seahawks defense was coming and this remains elite. Like, a lot of this is narrative based, and it does feel as if Brock Purdy needs to shift the narrative a little bit here going into the playoffs, because if that happens, there's a lot of reasons to kind of buy into the Niners as a plucky team in the NFC. And if it doesn't happen, they're one and done. Cause I do think they're right. Getting in. I think they're getting 10. I don't know what happens in Cleveland, but and I do think that the Titans,
I think, yeah,
are being slept. I don't know what happens in Cleveland
either, but I think that's going to be a shitty game that they might lose. And I picked that as a loss all season long, and the weather doesn't really help. Right. We'll see. But I can't picture them losing to the Titans, and then it's win one of your final three and you're in.
And the Bears are,
the
Bears are gettable. I mean, they're a lot of metrics, one of the worst teams.
They're very gettable. I think they will beat the Bears.
And the Colts are gettable too. And Seattle's gettable depending on if they need to play or not. Like none of these are out of the question. I think they'll be favored in three of them at least. They'll be favored in three out of the five. So I think they get favored against the Bears at home on Sunday Night Football. So it really does come down to, can this team start? In a weird way, this team that has not had any momentum all season, can they get some momentum going into the playoffs? One, you got to get there. And then two, can you get some momentum?
If you beat Seattle in week 18, you got it.
Right, right. It might just be as simple as that. Just who'd you beat last? Seattle, that's pretty good. But that was not a momentum building game. And I feel like Kyle and Brock and everybody thought that could be like a real momentum game for them. And in that way, I'm almost a little bit more bullish about the Browns game, because they have a lot to prove against the Browns. And maybe you get the rust knocked off you when Myles Garrett comes in at 24 miles per hour and takes your head off. And suddenly you realize, hey, maybe I should just get rid of the ball faster. Maybe I don't have as much time as I thought.
Yeah, that'll be tricky. That's a tricky assignment. Hot take. Going to go out on a limb there. Also, Malik Collins like cooking. Malik Collins revenge game.
Well, it's
him and Mason Graham like bowled two interior linemen over this week. Good Lord.
They're very, very good. They're very, very good.
I'm a Malik Collins truther. You hated him the entire time.
Well, life's a lot easier when you have Mason Graham and Myles Garrett on your
line,
too.
Yes, it is.
Malik Collins, when asked to do the job of one man, could not do it. But when you only ask him to just pick up some scraps, he's great. Good janitorial effort from Malik Collins, who will probably have a huge game, unquestionably. Can we talk about the Niners defense for a second?
And sure.
What worked for them? I thought Huff was a monster in that game. I know that the numbers don't bear it out.
He
can fire.
Been telling you. Also, they just had three defensive ends. I was like, they need another defensive end.
Right.
It was running with Clee Farrell, who got a pretty sick slow motion power sack.
That's right.
Out of nowhere. Sometimes Clee Farrell is like mostly, you're like, that's not great. But then occasionally does something almost superhuman. You're like, where did that come from?
How'd that guy get drafted fourth overall?
Yeah. And so it's with Sam O out, they were like trying to play Sam O through like an ankle injury where he couldn't move because they just physically needed him.
Yeah.
And because Robert Beal couldn't go too. So man, they just don't have enough dudes. No. But yeah, shout out to Bryce Huff, who's a fantastic player.
I also thought that Curtis Robinson was fine. I think it is a level lower than Bethune, but
yeah, not. I didn't notice him too much either way.
And then what I really thought stood out in this game, beyond obviously Jair Brown's two interceptions, was we didn't see or hear from D'Amador Lenore at all, which another really positive sign. That's back-to-back really good games from Lenore. And the Niners were in a lot of 40 stack in this game. Not just in big nickel, but sometimes in like a quasi base where they would bring the strong safety into the box, and they would go four on top of four. And that really did a number, because I'm going to ask you this straight up. Can you think of a single moment in that game where a Panthers tight end did anything?
No. I don't. It's hard for me to remember much of like what the Panthers offense did, aside from like a couple Rico Dowdle runs,
right,
and the McMillan touchdown and drops. It's that it was very, 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 very forgettable every time that offense was on the field.
Right.
Oh, and the interception they threw, and going jumbo, and then just God. Dave Canales was not dialed in. Good game for the defensive coordinators, but my God.
Yeah, I thought that going to the 40 stack was, and I think that both Shanahan and Saleh have done this a little bit this year, in that they start doing stuff that they're going to do the next week a little bit in the week prior. They like test it out a little bit against the opponent week prior. So like against the Buccaneers, they started doing more gap runs.
And they ran, I think, dash motion, which I've been obsessed with. Twice against the Falcons, and then ran it a ton against the Giants.
Right. Yeah, talk to me about dash motion, because the first play of the game, they're like, George Kittle, you're in dash motion.
Yeah. Well, I asked George Kittle about it, and he was like, no, I didn't. Oh, wait, we Oscared. I did dash. Yeah. And I talked to McCaffrey about it, and it's like, he was basically like, you need guys who really understand exactly what the playbook is and the timing, and like are precise, because one, if you don't run it correctly, where you're, again, for those who don't know, it's like you're sort of offset and you sort of turn in dash where you sprint towards the backfield, and then a snap happens and you like get out of there. But like you need to be like know exactly what the timing is, and then you need to be on a plane where you're not illegally going forward or any other direction. Mm-hmm. Juice likes it, and essentially what it does is it makes it harder for linebackers and other people to account for what that tight end is doing, because you can either, you know, dash into the backfield in a traditional fullback spot and break out right, or you can just keep going, but like it's hard to tell what they're doing with it. And they've used it a lot. They used it once in week one, didn't use it for like 7 weeks, and then broke it out against Atlanta, and now it's been like a major component of their offense. Kittle said that the Panthers caught on to it a little bit in this game, and it didn't work quite as well. But it's been a wrinkle that they've really liked, because it gets you moving and it makes you harder to account for as a blocker.
The sort of genealogy of it all is, we
talked, by the way, Brian Fleury, tight ends coach, run game coordinator, is the one who sort of came up with it and really started implementing it.
Well, it's clever, because it's and this is a legitimately excellent offensive innovation, in that, okay, we the Tyreek Hill dash motion, where he would come in looking like he was in motion, it would get him a running start, and then he would just go like this when the ball was snapped.
The cheat motion.
Cheat motion is what they called it, because it looked like cheating. It kind of was. So they did that. And a lot of teams tried to copy that. The Niners turned that into bump motion, which was more of a schematic thing.
More of a shuffle. Yeah. Right.
McCaffrey gets outside. It pulls the linebackers apart a little bit and gets him in a better position.
It helps with spacing and like him not getting pressed and identifying matchups and all that.
So you're getting those two aspects. And now you're also getting what I thought McVay did better than anybody last year, and we're starting to see more and more teams copy it, not just with GT counter or HT counter, but you're seeing it now with the insert blocks. So what the Rams did with Cooper Kupp and Puka Nacua, where you bring a wide receiver in and then they insert into the line as a lead blocker, sort of playing quasi tight end on a
cut block. I mean, Cooper Kupp is a tight end.
Right. And Puka Nacua has been playing a tight end. So with this dash motion that they're running, you're getting all three of those things. You're getting the insert blocker. You're getting the schematic breakdown, the connective tissues breaking down a little bit, especially at the linebacker and safety core. And you're getting the momentum that comes from the cheat motion. This is a legitimately awesome offensive innovation. And it's not surprising that as we get deeper and deeper, and they're healthier and healthier on the offensive side, they're doing more of it, because they have the guys who are smart enough, experienced enough, and talented enough to pull it off. But also it gives them a wrinkle that every team needs a wrinkle late in the season. Some teams simplify it and just try to pound it into your face. And the Niners were like that back in the day. But you need to have things in your back pocket to where, hey, you saw this on tape. Now we're throwing this at you and you haven't really dealt with it before. How are you supposed to schematically figure this out? I wonder if they're using it a little too soon, but it's working.
Yeah.
And it worked yesterday. No.
And that's all to say that, like, and I was talking to Brendel too. I feel like I talked to a lot of people yesterday.
That's great.
Where he's like, yeah, we left like a ton out there. Like they, like the run game didn't even look particularly good. And then eventually they started just getting it. Especially as they started running outside the tackles, where it was like obvious the strength of the Panthers was that front on the inside, three down linemen, and just congesting space and making it difficult between the tackles. And then they like ran crack toss and McCaffrey runs for like they just that was I felt like A-Rod that was always going to be that. There, and it just took them a while to like get to it, and I'm not quite sure why.
I think that they were messing around. Like
it did feel like they were.
Let's try out some cool stuff, and we can always go back to the stuff that we know will work no matter what. Like that's what it felt like. Which,
yep,
I'm not going to condone that as an NFL game plan. Maybe we start on the basic stuff and move our way up, but it worked, and you can get away with it against a team like Carolina. Who was a dud in this game outside of Brock? I had a hard time finding.
Farrell missed quite a few blocks. I was unimpressed. Like I think on back to back plays. That was not great. It's hard for me to even identify like what Curtis Robinson did, good or bad. Right. The defensive line, I didn't really notice all that much on the interior, but the Panthers weren't running that effectively. It is what's funny is when you're in the press box, it is almost harder to identify like what's going on in the moment. Like you'll see like one thing, but you don't get the full picture because you can't rewind and you don't get the replays, especially when you're in the front row and the TVs are like above your head and you
TVs
can't see.
Are like a minute delayed. It's like they're on satellite.
Right. But so like I can't tell you really how I thought the D-line as a whole played until I go back and watch. But yeah, I thought Farrell was underwhelming. Outside of that, I can't really pick too many duds.
So is this a one-off game in your minds, or is this a sign of things to come? In any
for Brock direction. Or the team as a whole?
Well, they're kind of one in the same in a lot of ways, aren't they?
Yeah, I think the defensive performance was encouraging. I don't necessarily think this translates. It might translate next week. I think the defense will play good this week against a Browns team, unless they get gutted on a lot of like dink and dunk, boot action, you know, screen plays and Judkins, which I think is a possibility. Where they don't actually allow that many points, but they kind of get gashed and tired in a game. They can't afford that. I do think the offense, maybe not this week in this cold weather Browns game, but I do think the offense will start looking better. I think people will probably sweat after an ugly game in Cleveland and be asking a lot of questions. But I do, I don't necessarily know that this represents like what the offense is in terms of Brock throwing interceptions. Because again, outside of that, they were like pretty dominant and in control of the game. So I'm not that worried about the offense outside, which is a stupid thing to say outside of Brock. But like, I really want to see, not this week, because this week will be a weird, probably bad weather game where we can't extrapolate a lot. But in 2 weeks, like, how does his processing look? Like, how quickly is he making decisions? That's what I want to know.
It's just so interesting that you view this, and I can't disprove any of this. I can't tell you that you're wrong. I want to, but I can't. I just don't see it as a processing issue. I see it as a physical issue. I see it as a timing issue that's exacerbated by bad footwork and somebody who's not on platform when they throw and is not driving through the ball. And
but I think that's all connected. It's all like a sort of mental kinetic chain thing.
Well, and I guess that my thought on where the weak ring on the chain is his feet, which lends itself to the toe. And maybe that's me just being overly simplistic, but okay. And that even takes away from the second interception with the jump pass, because what's the toe doing on the jump pass? You have no footwork. when you're jumping and throwing it 30 yards in the air. That's just a bad decision. But on the other ones, like, let's just use the first one where you're going for Jennings on the most basic over route concept that they've run a million times before. And yeah, Horn does a great job getting under the route, but you have nothing but space to your right, Jennings left.
No,
to
put it out. That's
not
true.
Collapsing safety?
Yes, there was. Okay.
All right, well, there was that other drive safety. It even harder.
That other safety was coming down quick, and he was almost there too. Part of that was like Jennings slow, just being slow. But again, like, I do think Brock was a tick late, and the throw was off. But it is something where he's going to trust Jennings on like any 50-50 ball on that concept.
Yeah,
a ton of the time. He also kind of has to throw it in that situation from your own end zone.
Mm-hmm. I didn't see a scramble area there. I mean, and it's not the biggest thing is it's not one of these things where there's a lot of gray area. I mean, it's just pretty clear each of the times he needs to throw the ball faster, harder, and more accurately and in rhythm. And I've seen him do it. I saw him do it a week ago. So is it the toe? Is it not? We'll find out. And ultimately the rest of the season will be defined by that. Because I think they're getting to the playoffs, whether or not they can. They can dink and dunk their way to the playoffs. But what does that mean? Like, what good is it, Chicago Bulls?
Right. That, if you're I think in the that's play-in the point tournament again? Is like, we could get in, but we're not really evolving to what will make us a real threat.
Right.
And I think you're better off trying to actualize and realize the potential of the offense and failing at it, mm-hmm, in an effort to be a real threat than to try and be like, all right, well, we can limp our way there. With sort of, and it's not to, and that's to say that like probably there should be a better balance of like Brock taking more dink and dunk stuff. And they did that in the second half. But like, again, that's not really what's going to challenge defenses. And that's not what's going to accomplish anything in the playoffs.
And ultimately, it is still a franchise quarterback who is heading now into the big money, you know, big money years of his contract. Like,
yeah. And I don't begrudge anyone for being frustrated as hell and pissed off. That's a lot of money to pay a quarterback who's small. By the way, any quarterback, that was my other takeaway, any quarterback that's 6'2 or less, you got downgraded like a full round.
Yeah
no one that's 6'2 or less can be drafted in the first two rounds ever.
Yeah, the idea that Bryce Young could get by because of his processing skills without any of the physical traits was put to a rest last night.
At least they didn't spend an extra draft pick to go and get him.
Well, yeah. And I suppose that you can make the argument of, since you can just void contracts now with a level of impunity, that they're not too concerned about Brock and the long-term ramifications there. There's always money in the banana stand for that. But yeah, Brock certainly did not look much larger than Bryce Young yesterday, both physically and in play. That is of concern. But I'm going to bet, well, they don't have any choice. They have to bet on Brock to take it. Because again, what's the point of throwing Mac Jones back out there so that you can make the playoffs and certainly lose in the first round, even to teams that are kind of gettable, when you have the possibility of taking this thing to another level like we saw in Arizona? Right. And yeah, if you fail trying to do that, so be it. But that's a bigger conversation for the offseason, which I guess would be upon us pretty quickly. We haven't talked about the Aiyuk thing, by the way. Would you like to get into
that? Oh, yeah, we probably should.
Weird. It's weird.
You know, it's what's particularly weird is for the contract stuff, Aiyuk, in every single one of my experiences, and I'll speak for myself, but I assume you have a similar perspective, seemed like an incredibly humble, down to earth. And that's not to say humility is a prerequisite. Like, I don't mind when guys are,
if you're
like,
great,
talking,
you can
their
tell
shit.
Me you're great. Yeah.
But like, seemed like a pretty level headed dude. Seemed like he had his head on straight, like, was, you know, had gone through ups and downs early in his career and figured it out. Was a good quote, was just a good person to talk to, and really pretty honest and saw the full picture. And then it's like he lost the plot. I don't know if someone gave him really bad advice or what happened, but it was a different thing than like Kuminga, but like just a level of not reading the room at all, not even like reading the room wrong, just like not even seeing the room.
Right. Not understanding anything.
Not having any sense of like what's actually happening here, and not trying to like file a grievance to get that money back, which tells me one, like he just wasn't going to those things and was like, no, this is going to hold up. Like they got me.
Yeah.
They got me. Right. Or just you don't care, which is a lot of money not to care about. Very strange.
It's a bad precedent too. It's not going to bode well for the Niners. The Niners are trying to get off the money. I understand why they want to get off the money. They don't think that he'll ever achieve the terms of those contracts. I mean, he this is his first year of the extension, right? So they lost last year in his fifth year option.
Yeah. This and apparently the cap stuff, they don't save much. It's like mostly cash.
They can take a hell of a hit for next year and have it all off the books for 27 when they really need it to be off the books.
They'll post June 1 it though and keep kicking
it down. Post June 1, it actually goes mostly to 27 from what I can tell, which is right. When they need it to not be. So I think they might just take the huge hit for next year. And it comes back to, I think that anyone who thought that Brandon Ayuk prior or post an ACL, LCL, MCL, and meniscus injury was going to be Brandon Ayuk second team all pro again was really... Might have been Brandon Ayuk might have been the only one who thought that. So, and I guess he's acting in that accordance. But the Niners are like, man, we got, this is a lot of cash. We're going to be cash, we're going to be cap strapped in 27. Let's move off this now. And he gave them, I guess, enough of a window to pull that number, to pull that lever.
Yeah.
And that's weird. I mean, I talked to Mike Silver on KNBR this morning. He broke the story and I'm like, well, what happened? Like clearly something like there, you're looking for this big blow up moment where he tells John Lynch to, suck it and leave.
Right.
And it's like, well, we're going to fire you for cause now because that's what they're doing. They're firing him for cause.
Right.
And Silver doesn't know. He doesn't know. And he's the one who broke the damn story 5 months after it happened. Right. Like we didn't know about this for five months and Silver comes in and drops it on us on Friday. So there's no obvious big blow up, right? And something that you learn if you report a story that's got some, that really kind of makes some waves is the second and the third wave, people come in and they fill in the gaps for you. Like quickly, sources come out of the people that you cold called for months or you were working for months and wouldn't tell you squat. The second that the dam is broken, they'll tell you anything. And Silver still doesn't know what happened.
It's so strange. This doesn't happen.
No,
like
it has never happened under anything but the most extreme circumstances.
The only time this happens is there's going to be like a Joe Mixon thing where like the rumor was that like he got like a surgery or like a tightrope thing on his ankle and the team didn't approve it. So that's been and it didn't go well. And then there was like the Christian Wilkins thing. It's like the only ways it happens is like around injuries, but like. It was not that Ayuk went and got like another procedure. It's that like he didn't seem to show up.
Yeah. And to be fair, in that there are a lot of guys who don't just show up, right? If you're on injury, it was interesting that Nick Bosa was in the box yesterday because I don't think he's around all that often.
I think they're, they're like,
he was there. You better be there. You better show up. You better be there. Go in the press box.
I haven't seen much of him.
I haven't seen him at all. Because one, they trust him, right? You want to go in Florida and work out? Like, we trust that you're going to come in great shape and all that stuff. Like, we trust you on that process. Fred lives here full time.
He's pissing off the linemen because every time they show him, it's when the offense is on the field.
That's a good note.
Colton McKibbitz was like yelling at him. He's like, "Hey, Fred,
can you just that's more of a stadium
farming.
Ops issue." Yeah, Jesus. So
yeah. By the way, Stadium Ops was trying to show like a face mask on
Stadium Ops
on Upton Stout.
Yeah,
and it was like barely. I don't really think it was. It's also like, I don't, a stiff arm's fair game unless you literally grab a full hand of someone's face mask on a stiff arm. It's fair game. But then, so they're showing in slow motion Upton Stout getting stiff armed into the dirt like three or four different times because they're like, maybe there's a face mask.
We talked about this after the Rams game. The stadium ops is just flag thirsty. They just want the flag so bad. They want the crowd to get riled up by penalties that weren't called because they learned their lesson that if you want to get a Niners fan riled up, you just say holding in the 2019 Super Bowl and they just go off. And you know, it's pretty simplistic. Basically, this is the concept of Twitter. If we just show you things that will get angry, you'll stay more engaged and therefore on our platform. But I digress. What were we even talking about before I got off on stadium ops?
Not a clue what we were talking about. Aiyuk.
Oh, Aiyuk. Okay. So with the Aiyuk thing, it is jarring that he is not challenging this. Precedent, you have to challenge this, right? But doesn't that say a lot that he's not doing it? This seems to me, and I don't know if you've ever been in one of these relationships, Hutch, where both parties want to break up, but neither one wants to break up, right? Like no one wants to be the bad guy to break up with somebody. So it seems to me as if the Niners were minding all their P's and Q's. And this is another great life lesson in the career world. You can maybe infer if it's not. But if they want to fire you in a job, they're not going to wait for you to have some blow up moment. They're going to look at your expense reports. If they want to fire you, they'll find something that you consider innocuous. And then it's actually not innocuous. It's innocuous until it doesn't have to be. So things like showing up to meetings or not, when you're a fully injured player, well, that's not a big deal. And it's pretty loosey-goosey until they're trying to get rid of you. And then it really matters. And so that's on Brandon Aiyuk for not understanding that, hey, you got to be on your P's and Q's. They're trying, if they've told you nothing, it's that they're trying to get rid of you. With your knee exploded, all they did was try to trade you to anybody who would take you, and they couldn't get any bidders. Maybe be on your P's and Q's a little bit more during the summer if you are trying
Remember
to
Remember when he could have gone to the Patriots for like 32 a year and was like, no, the quarterback situation, which fair, you don't know what it's going to be, but also, man.
That's the other frustrating part. And you know, now a year from this, it is incredible the amount of times that Aiyuk changed his mind during that month. And this isn't to say that the Niners did the right thing, because what the Niners should have done is what I do with my toddler, which is you can't make up your mind. I've made up your mind.
And they did. And then Kyle went, wait.
Correct. So everybody's disorganized now. We don't have a unified parties. Brandon Aiyuk and Brandon Aiyuk can't figure out what they want. Brandon Aiyuk's agent is John Lynch's agent. That's awesome. Super awesome job there. Like
strange.
But you can't have the same agent as the guy who is in contract negotiations with you. Kyle and John aren't on the same page with this. Jed was out doing something in the UK, not paying attention. And all of this led to a contract that the second they signed it, everyone was like, "Oh, we've made a terrible mistake." No one liked it the second it was signed. And then they tried to trade him. The second he got injured, they tried to trade him. They were looking to, a lot of the conversation you and I had it going into that Chiefs game where he was starting to get it going is, oh, maybe they can trade him now. Like everyone wanted out of this thing. And so the Niners found a way to get out of it. And Brandon Aiyuk also not wanting to be the one to, stick around in a relationship that he doesn't want to be anymore is like, I'm good. I won't fight it. But that's going to be a bad fiscal decision for him, I think.
It's not good.
It's Man, what good. A mess. It's not going to bode well for the Niners either when they want to spend a little bit of money if they ever want to get around to that again, because burning a player that you signed to a $30 million contract after 7 games might not get you into the final round of some bidding wars. You might get disqualified.
I think there's an element of people saw how IU handled the offseason and they can spin that, but it's not helpful. It's not a selling point.
No, it is a mess. And frankly, this is the best case scenario for the Niners. If we're just looking at it from a strict business side of things, like they got out clean. I mean, I think they're out $35 million in cash for 7 games, but like they got out clean. And the final thing I'll say on this, and I'll give you the floor. Sorry, I'm rambling, but
you're good.
we talk about the situation of Kyle running up into the John Lynch's office and be, don't trade him, don't trade him. You know, right. End of The Graduate, just banging on the glass, don't trade him. One, Ayuk had to sign the contract too. That's bad. Now, Ayuk did go to Kyle and be like, I don't know if I want to get traded. It's like, don't trade. The trade's in the hopper. He was ready to go to Pittsburgh. And it's like, well, you can't take that guy seriously, so you shouldn't have. You're playing with Kyle's emotions, which will always favor having good players over trading them for, what was it, three
bad players and the sad part of the whole thing is Ayuk played at a fucking top five level that season, which is like hard to remember with the context.
Yeah, like, was awesome.
He was fucking phenomenal.
But it was one time in his career, and it was an offense that was humming on all, one of the great offenses.
He was also very good the year before, but he wasn't.
No, I'm not saying he was. He's clearly not a bad player.
The
reason that this was such a complicated situation is because the area was so gray that everyone was in. You had unreliable operators on both sides of this thing. You had inherent conflicts of interests in terms of who's giving advice to whom. And it was all just a big hot mess. But I do think that we forget in that sort of cinematic moment of Kyle telling John, like, don't trade him, don't trade him. And then they immediately then pretty much go and sign him to a $30 million five-year contract. There was a third option, which was do nothing. And they were going to suspend him for the year, were they not? And just ride that thing out. And just put him on.
Were they going to suspend him for the year?
Well, they at least threatened to.
Right.
But they could have just had
him
play
like
on the fifth year option and done the franchise tag. That's what the franchise tag is for. When you don't know the right answer and you're constantly going back and forth.
Have a fixation with doing the deals or like getting out, and they don't ever like to play that. And the franchise tag does get ugly and messy.
True.
For most of those
teams. What was this? What was this?
I know. I mean, I know.
Yeah,
but they should have said at a certain point, and I guess they tried to, and then Kyle called it off, but they waited too late, I think.
In trying to avoid being messy, they in fact did the messiest thing. And let that be a lesson to them, Jake. Just sometimes you're trying to avoid it, just like in the, you know, this situation, they're trying to break up, so they're looking for a clean way out, and they got it. But if you're trying to avoid a messy situation, sometimes just lean into it, because the clarity is going to come through with a little bit more time. And it's a sliding doors moment, but had Ayuk busted his knee on his fifth year option, well, there's some pretty clear evidence to what you do then is you don't pay him that, you know? And this is all, you know, hypothetical at this point, or it's certainly in the past, but
before we get to comments, I have one question. What happens when Ricky Pearsall has a breakout year next year and puts up 1,000+ yards, probably 8 touchdowns.
Yeah, in his third year.
And they're in a situation where they go, oh, interesting. What do we...
Wait.
I guess that would be after year three, so you got another year of that to figure out.
And you have a fifth-year option on him.
Right.
Just wait. It is... NFL stands for not for long. Nothing is permanent in this league. The beauty of the great players is that there is a sense of permanence. That's what separates them. They feel inevitable. They feel perpetual.
Let's say Ricky has like two straight years where it's good. Do you think they extend him then? I think I need to see what those
years are. But yeah, probably.
I know. I'm just asking hypotheticals because it does feel like that is...
Well, and I'll say...
A strong possibility.
And I'll say this... they need some goddamn wide receivers now.
That they do. It seems
next year's. Do you think Juwan Jennings is more likely to come back now?
I would move on from Juwan.
I would too.
But there is like a level of who do we have?
Correct. It's Pearsall, Jordan Watkins, Jacob Cowing,
DeMarcus Robinson.
DeMarcus Robinson is on another year.
I think it was a 3-year deal.
It was a two. I looked this up yesterday.
Nice.
So, yeah.
Oh, I was thinking of Farrell. Yeah.
Farrell. What a deal. What a contract. What a crop. They're going to need some receivers. And now, again, we're in a position where when you drafted Pearsall,
Jacob Cowing.
If he exists.
I don't think he does.
Talking about a guy who,
they're going to bring back Sky Moore.
Probably. He's actually been pretty good as a returner.
He's been fucking fantastic as a returner. He's been cooking.
I don't mean to blaspheme, but he's looked pretty good. Maybe Isaac Arendo finally converts, but
to tight end.
Linebacker. Center, who's to say?
You know what they should. Yeah, sorry. I'm just it's Larry's wet dream, but converting him to fullback, Juice retires. Yeah. Arendo converts to fullback.
Yeah, I'm sure that the guy that they can't play because he's terrible in pass pickup is going to turn into their fullback.
I know.
But with dash motion, who's to say what's possible?
I'm sure he won't have an illegal motion penalty every goddamn time.
He had illegal motion penalties when he was playing running back. They tried to bump him
more on his plate. I'm sure that'll sort it out.
It's that we haven't challenged him enough. Regardless, it's funny when they drafted Pearsall, a lot of the anger about it was they don't need wide receivers. And now it's like we have Ricky Pearsall and no wide receivers. So,
right.
Who got the last laugh there? And the answer is no one. It's a pretty dire situation.
All right. I'm going to take a few questions here. Let's start with thanks for the super Arcadian Rouge. That first week against Seattle, Purdy and Kittle marched down the field and punched that defense in the face. Mm-hmm. Think without the toe, we see a very different Purdy this year. Of course. I think absolutely.
They punched him in the face yesterday. That was a great first drive.
Right. But it's like, what are they now? Post-toe? We're in a post-toe era?
Yeah.
Like, what is... what? Right. Like, I do think we see a very different Purdy this year, and I think he probably looks mostly good and with some, like, egregious bad, because he's a big buck hunter.
Is that what he calls himself?
No, that's what I'm saying. He looks for the big shot, and he is fixated on it a little bit too much. But it's also what elevates this offense and gives it the potential to like do something.
It would be great if it was obvious. It would be great if it was just undeniable. There's like four undeniable quarterbacks in football, and everybody else is either crappy or operates in some sort of up and down. And Brock Purdy is going to operate in the up and down. And if you don't think that's worth the contract, so be it. But good luck on the open market trying to find something else. Can we also here? Very fast? Sorry.
Yep.
The Toyota-thon fit.
Awesome.
All-timer.
Awesome.
All-timer. Going out there throwing three interceptions and then showing up to your press conference like with a NASCAR jacket on.
He's like, I have a deal with Toyota and I will abide by those rules. He's not doing the Brandon Ayuk.
Nope. Nope. Brandon Ayuk's wearing the wrong shorts, and Brock Purdy's going to wear that goddamn jacket.
Damn right.
All-time fit. And frankly, something I will come back to if this does not
go respect
well
it. Me. I respect how bad of a look it is.
He's a man of character. He keeps his promises. And God bless you, Brock.
I will say after the game, Kyle at least came over for their post-talk. People always like make a big deal out of it, but they always do talk in the locker room after the game. Kyle did come over and sort of with a grin on his face before they had their.
What kind of deals can I currently get a Toyota-thon? What kind of financing is available?
He's like, "Ooh, buddy, that was not a good one." All right, but it did feel like they were all trying to like light the mood and be like, "Listen, like you're going to throw three picks sometimes."
I know that this is not something that people in the modern era of opinion want to hear. But like you do have to take your read from the team, and there is perhaps irrational amounts of confidence towards Brock Purdy in that locker.
Yeah, they're not sweating it.
They're not worried. Now next week we might have a different conversation.
Small I don't think anyone's going to extrapolate anything from next week. But I will.
It's also funny that everyone. I did radio this morning, and everyone's like, "Yo, it's when was the last time you did this and that?" Going through the basic rudimentary comments and stuff, but he didn't have a good game in Cleveland the last time they played there. They lost three straight games in the middle of that season, and everyone thought the sky was falling, and then they were in overtime of the Super Bowl. Like, you're allowed lulls, as you said earlier. Like, quarterbacks are allowed bad games. I mean, look at what Mahomes is doing. They can't push the ball down the field this year either. Now, that's not a physical issue, that's a shitty wide receiver issue, but like, nobody's great in the NFL this year, including the Rams, because I've seen the Rams lose to the 49ers, which has to be held against you. This is wide open, and if Brock Purdy is at something close to his best, the Niners are in it, even with a bad defense, because that offense is a top five unit when it's cooking, but it hasn't cooked.
Agreed.
It hasn't cooked.
Cam's dad with a history lesson. Montana had four
picks. Yeah, Lombardi tweeted that up. That was 1984. I wasn't even born yet.
That was how is that not relevant to today, Dieter? They're playing the Cleveland Browns. It's the same Cleveland Browns team from 1984.
Yeah, who was the head coach of the Cleveland? Who was the head coach of the Cleveland Browns in 1984? That was pre-Kozar. I mean, come
couldn't
on.
Tell you.
Cleveland lost a team for 17 years and got it back in that stretch. They were at Cleveland Memorial Stadium. Like, it's just not. It's just not applicable.
All right, more comments here. Nevin, I got yelled at because I didn't realize it in the moment that it was Nick Martin that forced the fumble, but hell yeah.
He looked great. He looked great on
two teams. Special teams tackles. It did look, they didn't go to base.
No.
But it did look like it was going to be Gifford to me, the way the sidelines were set up. So
no, they went big nickel with Pinnick.
Who, by the way, what are we doing with that? Here's what I think. I think if you're going to play big nickel,
yep,
you should do it the way they did it with like Lenore last year. Move Jair into the box as the big nickel on those plays. Have Siegel deeper, or you can like rotate and have Mustafa in there,
right,
whatever you want, and keep Jair deep because maybe he's more comfortable there now.
Right.
But like Siegel's not, I mean, Pinnick's not adding anything for you. I just think.
No.
Yeah. And maybe he's just less of a target and he's a bigger body and you just trust it more. But like he missed and whiffed on like two or three tackles in this game.
It wasn't great. I'll say this. When they went to big nickel, it was almost exclusively in a 40 stack. So they were also bringing in a safety on the line. So it's one of those things where it's like, okay, you know, should you rotate Jair in there? Doesn't that kind of give away the game? Doesn't that make your defense very predictable? And the whole point is that they need to be they can't be predictable at all. I don't know why the lights just turned off. They can't be predictable. If they're predictable, they're dead. The whole point is that they have, well, I'm never predictable. Heaven forbid. AI can't replace me yet. But in terms of defense, they have to be chaotic.
Right.
And that might turn into something horrible. But they have to be chaotic and dynamic and just trying stuff out because the whole name of the game, we can talk about stuff in the run and pretend,
right,
they need turnovers. That's it. That's the only way this team wins, turnovers. And they are winning because they're getting turnovers.
Yep.
And that requires versatile players like Brown, maybe not like Pinnick, like Mustafa, to be in multiple different places. I'm with you that Siegel should be getting another shot here. And that you can rotate those three guys in if you're going to be playing three safeties a lot. But that's just not where they're at. And I haven't gotten a good answer as to why that's the case.
Neither have I. Cam's dad, new Sinatra at Kezar. That's awesome. By the way, Kezar, not far from there. They're adding a soccer team either in a year or two. It's like an MLS select team.
They've done that a couple times now. You don't remember the SF Deltas?
No, of course not. I wasn't here for that.
It was like 3 years ago.
Well, I saw El Farolito play a game there.
Yeah. Now that's a team. Don't be hitting me on El Farolito in the U.S. Cup.
That's a squad. But anyway, we're going to rip through some comments here.
Let's
Sharks looking good. By the way, those are children. Those are children. We saw them. I saw them down there today. And I was like, these kids are 12 years old. What do you do? What do you mean this is like a top five player in the NHL? What are you talking about?
Yes. It's really jarring. Like I'm working through it emotionally, frankly. Like they are not technically closer in age to my children than they are to me, but we close. Are right on the line. It is right that we ran the numbers and it was like 10 months. And it's like, that
That's
ain't
terrifying.
Good. That's not good. So I'm entering a new stage of my life in covering sports.
Pre-grief.
pretty much. This is like journalism menopause for me, but it is.
We should rename that the podcast.
Journalism menopause. I think we might get a different collection of an audience.
But
in that, they are children and they are kicking ass, and that is a dangerous combo.
Agreed. Nevin says, I think you'll be down on Curtis after you watch the tape.
Probably.
Wouldn't surprise me.
Probably.
Real Griff. I love Pierso, but we need to see a full season first. No question about it.
Yep.
I was just projecting and doing a thought experiment. Will we see Watkins being active over Bourne? No.
They should. But
they should.
And Will have not aligned also, very much.
Can Bourne stop tweeting about how he's like not getting the ball every game? He's like doing that after every game. He's like, riding the bench, but I love my guys. It's like, shut up.
Yeah, stop. Dude. Just, you can't be the... I'm glad that he had two big games where he got to be the main character. We all knocked it out. That's it. He used it up. Yep. His 15 minutes are over. And now he has to be judged on the actual tape as opposed to the box score. And by the way, the Niners got value on that deal, right? But it is so Jover for Kendrick Bourne. And I would start playing Watkins over him. I think these next two games would be good opportunities to do that. But when the offense doesn't hum, like it didn't, if it had hummed against Carolina, then you're like, oh, maybe you can work some stuff in. You got a little bit of house money to play with. But because you need to be right, you can't
throw a
rookie in there.
I think they go, okay, we would rather have our sixth receiver be Watkins, but if Jennings goes down, we need Bourne.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
That's what it is. I think last one we'll take here. Benali, for this week only, is Dre your top five safety? I said in my column, I won't tell him this week that he can't call himself that.
I'm a coward because I had him on the radio this morning.
And you didn't follow
and
up?
I had it teed up. And then I'm like, it's kind of mean. And I didn't do it. And I should have done it. I should have done it. I did get him to say that safeties are destiny, though. So that's officially in the record.
Good for you.
Yeah. It was a good chat. It was a good chat. He's a big fan of Malik Mustafa, as we all are.
That's it's nice. I was hosting a show last year where I had Greg Cosell on. Greg Cosell went, that's actually a good question. And I went, that's right.
You'll buzz off of that for years.
What a rush.
I love Greg. I haven't Greg doesn't do
a lot of people ask Greg Cosell the wrong questions and get confused why he doesn't answer them. And it's like Greg Cosell is here to answer film questions. He's watched the film. Ask him a question about the team and the nature of the team and what they have done on the field. Don't ask him big picture questions about the nature. He's like, that's not what I do. I've never done that. Don't ask me that.
No, I used to almost a weekly hit with Cosell. He's awesome. He's the best in the game. NFL matchup show on ESPN Plus, highly recommended. They're selling it. Were you there when I told Sal Antonio that I watched the matchup show?
No, but you told me about telling Sal Powell.
He was so excited. He was so excited that someone watched the matchup show.
He's like, I didn't know if anyone was watching it.
I might be the only person on the planet who gets the full use of their ESPN Plus subscription because I watch NFL primetime, the matchup show, and hockey. Buddy, that's a good $5.99 spent. Beautiful. It's a beautiful thing.
All right.
We will watch the Cleveland tape. Whether you find out what we think about
I'm
it or
actually
not,
excited,
to be determined.
Which Shedeur Sanders did, because I wasn't great. Funny, I saw one throw and no one else, and people like, wow, the narrative shifted. I'm like, can someone show me a fucking film clip? I would like to know.
Nope. Let me tell you. All right. I watched it.
But we will talk to you on Thursday. Not Thursday. Definitely not Thursday.
We might do it tomorrow. We might do it tomorrow. We might record it. We'll probably record it and put it out.
All right. Well, we'll talk to you at some point this week. And remember, when you're at Thanksgiving, if we put it out on Wednesday or bank it, just put it on the TV. Don't put the games on.
Right.
When your family's around, just throw on Dieter and Hutch as loudly as possible.
That's right. Let them be sick.
That's right.
Fill your belly and then become a sicko.
All right, folks. Happy Thanksgiving. See ya.
Happy Thanksgiving. Bye.